Bases and everything. Everything be ready for them when they come.
When you were getting ready to deliver?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And when they get ready to deliver, I had the doctor and two nurses. Because I'd already arranged the visiting nurses. And the doctor would be there and the nurses would be there. And my poor husband would still have to go through.
It was nothing
my mother, to help. My mother was no help because she remarried and she was having kids the same time I was. Except the last one. Lord have mercy. But it was funny. But I had all my five children at home. And they all got along all right.
Where did blacks live during the Depression, basically?
They're in the same sections. There were some down in some of they call a holler. That's down there in Lexington Avenue and down in there. But that was before then. Trotters was there. They had begun to come in here. They came in here during the war, you know, during World War I. A few more came in here, and there was a few. Then they used to live down in Whiting Street and round down and down the south end, some sections of the south end they lived down there. And there was a few in Harold Staley. In any numbers, they lived around, as I said, Lexington Avenue, and down Jones's Avenue, and more of them lived down in there, and then there was some that, that's the dog, it sounded like a person. And that was, where else did they live? Highland Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
They lived up in Highland Avenue. Arch Street, Fulton Street. Those streets are gone now since the thruway has gone through there. They mm-hmm. lived in Fulton Street, Arch Street. Some few lived down Washington Avenue, down that lower end of Washington Avenue. And they were scattered around, but I mean in any numbers.
But they
was all scattered around mm-hmm. different parts of the city. A few lived in the north end.
Mm-hmm.
And but they lived like one or two families being Jackson Avenue, but in no great numbers. They were scattered around mm-hmm. the city like that. In the West End, out there in Howard Avenue, excuse me, in Howard Avenue there was about three, and Beechwood Avenue there was the Reeds on, but most of the people that lived in these sections owned their own homes, see.
Mm-hmm.
They owned their own property.
Okay.
And they, so there was some families there in Beechwood, and there was around in Howard Avenue there was three or four two-family houses where they lived. Yeah, there was three or four Johnsons on the house out there, and the Demings and Miss Fry, she owned the house out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the Reeds, they owned a house in around the corner of Beechwood, right around from Howard Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another big house down in further down Howard Avenue. There was a renter, no house to rent it to them. And they just lived all around in the mm-hmm. down in the city.
Did the church play a particular role during the Depression, helping blacks who, you know, maybe not didn't have enough food or clothing?
Well, now I'll tell you the way our church used to help, and I think the others too, is at Thanksgiving time. People would, you know, find families, or someone would send in the name of somebody that would need a basket
mm-hmm.
at Christmas time. And we would get food together and make up Thanksgiving baskets
mm-hmm.
and Christmas baskets.
Okay.
And our society, the Home Mission Society, all during the year, if you heard tell of anybody that was in need, why, we would always, get baskets, clothes, things like that, take it out, and
So you were sort of working. What about clubs and social organizations? Were there any fraternal organizations outside of the church at that time?
Well, there was the Elks organization, but they people that belonged to the Elks, some of them belonged to the church, but not as an organization. They belonged, the same as the Masonics now.
We Masonics have a lot were of, back in the Depression time, in the 20s and 30s. The Masonics were in his
Oh, oh yeah, we've had, we've got Masonics in our church. He's been in there for a number of years. Elks too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, the Elks organization has been, oh, they've been here since I was a kid.
Oh.
I used to go to the Elks ball. That was nice. See, now we weren't allowed to go to every Tom, Dick, and Harry thing came along, but they were, the Masons used to give a reception. The 29th of May every year, and the 27th was our wedding anniversary. We'd always go to that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no hard liquor in the Masonic, and if you was caught bringing any in there, they would just throw you out. That's all. They had punch, and they used to serve a salad, and some of the women used to make the salad and put it in these dinner rolls, and things like that. That's what they served for their reception. And it was a dress affair, and you only got an invitation if you was...
if you knew someone, socially.
That's right. Yeah, and that's how you got into the Masonics. The Elks, of course, was a little more open, but it was a nice affair, and they used to have a big band, and you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. We used to go to the Elks ball. That was always the Easter ball. They'd have that after Easter. That would usually be the Monday after Easter.
Mm-hmm.
It would be the Elks ball, and of course, most people look forward to going to the Elks ball,
mm-hmm.
and. Then at that time, we had Knights of Pythias here. My husband used to belong to Knights of Pythias. We had a Knights of Pythias organization here, and then they had, there was several, the Household of Ruth, that was a women's lodge. And they had another one. Because Miss Clara Wilson used to belong to all of them. I can't think of the other one.
Mm-hmm.
But they had those organizations. Yeah, they've always had them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the most active right now, I don't think, is the Elks and the Masons. They've always been active right now.
Let's move to World War II. You said you had a son that participated in that war?
Oh, no. No, my son would, if he hadn't gone into to war work, he would have had to.
But he didn't.
But because he was married then, he had a child, and he had a good job. But they told him that if he didn't go into war work, he'd have to go into the army. Well, he didn't want to go into the army, and I didn't want him in the army. And so that's when he went to the brass shop. So he went in the brass shop, but he wouldn't take anything in there but crane job. He went in there and he'd run a crane. And he didn't go in the foundry like his father, but he run a crane. And of course they changed his hours. And the thing of it was, he had started. He wanted to be a certified public accountant. Business administration. He had started out to UB, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing of it was that after they kept changing him up on that, he couldn't go. Just didn't make it like he did now. Mm-hmm. Couldn't go. So anyway, he went in the brass shop. So brass shop, after he'd been in there, I don't know how many years, they put him head over the shipping department for the crane. He's running the crane, put him head over the shipping department. And they found out what he was capable of doing, which he was capable of doing when he went in there. But at that time, they wasn't putting it in office jobs and things like that, you know. So the man wanted him to go into, well, that was after his children had got all grown and they'd married and gone away from home. So they, and he was always catching coal on a crane and thing and whatnot. So they wanted him to go in the office. But his mama, what you think about it? I said, well, Ralph, I said, your family's, he said, they're offering me a good proposition. And he said, I want to, so what do you think about it? I said, well, I said, your family's out of your hand, and you might as well, I said, just take it easy. Go on, support you and your wife. I said, take it easy. Mm-hmm. Get a job. Went in the office, dressed up every day. Became the first black president of the Quarter of a Century Club. The Bridgeport Brass. And some of the men that worked with him, the McIntosh, said, oh, you ought to go to the, wish you could go to one of their fairs and hear your son conduct his meetings. But you see, nobody could go to the Quarter of a Century Club but the members of the Quarter of a Century Club. The wives couldn't go. My husband was a member of the Quarter of a Century Club, too. And
so he got a chance. Did he get a chance to see
his
son?
He never got a chance to see his son.
Oh.
Because he was sick. He had taken sick, and because he was in the Quarter Century Club before my son was.
I'm sure.
Because he'd been in the brass shop a great
long,
much longer.
Uh-huh.
No, he never got a chance, but I'm sure he'd have been very proud.
I know.
And so anyway, he became the president, and then stayed in there until the brass shop. In fact, he was in the brass shop for 34 years, my son was.
Uh-huh.
So he retired with a pinch. And that's one thing that I am so proud of. In my heart, I'm happy to see that our black men were able to, so many of them, retire like other men and enjoy a little of life while they were still alive. I was just proud of that, and I still am. I think it's a wonderful thing. Because they were able, they have worked, and worked. And then die and never have anything. But they were able to retire. I know many of them that's retired, and we got several brass shop men right in our church that have worked in there, and men that just praised my husband because they said he had done so much for them because he had worked with the union. And in fact, during the Depression, he was one that would start it. He was one of the main organizers of the union.
Mm-hmm.
And he went off and represented the union in Philadelphia one time. And he was there when he was only, couldn't draw, wasn't making any money, was taking part of the money he was making out of what we ought to had to pay for a place, to have a meeting place for the union, trying to organize that union. The union used to meet in our cellar. They used to meet everywhere trying to get this union organized. And my husband was one of the, but men today tell me about my husband and what a great
work he did.
Yeah, great work, and the men have gained from it, you know.
I see.
And that was, but to me, just to see that some of them was able to be around here and enjoy it,
yes.
I think it's great.
Yes, it is.
I think it's great.
It is.
And it's been a great blessing to them.
Mm-hmm.
But, so as far as, but as you said, you know, well, I'll tell you, I think as far as prejudices go, I think there's more of it in Bridgeport now than I've ever seen. Because,
you think
I mean,
it's because
I hear,
there are more blacks
I hear tell of it. I hear tell of it more.
Uh-huh.
And but what disgusts me is when people talk about segregated schools. There's never been any segregated schools in Bridgeport, and I wish they'd stop saying that. What makes these schools segregated in Bridgeport is that, you know, and a lot of this thing about where we are all in one lump together,
mm-hmm.
is the real estate people.
Yes.
That's who I blame it on.
Yes.
And if you get in a neighborhood where the majority of the kids are black, and you put them in a school and it's black, that's not segregation. Not in my book. That's not segregation. Because if you're in the neighborhood and the majority of them are white, you call that, you might as well call that segregation too. But it's not segregation. And so you can't tell me that Lincoln School over here or Dunbar School is a segregated school, because it's not segregated. The majority of the kids over there are going to be black kids. And they go to that school because it's a school in their neighborhood. And I believe in neighborhood schools. I don't believe in this busing. I do not. I never did. Because, and one thing, they put people on them buses to drive. They're not always qualified drivers. And they drive. I see the buses go through here with those children sometime coming through here, going over there to McKinley School, and honest to goodness, they come down this street and take that corner there on almost two wheels, carrying them little kids over there to school. And you know that's dangerous. I'd much rather see my kid walking from here over there to McKinley. In fact, 9 kids in our family graduated from McKinley. All of my grandchildren and 2 of my children graduated from McKinley School and went to high school from there.
Yes.
And they went to Harding High School. They didn't go all over town to no high school. They went to Harding High School. And it did my heart good for me to go up there in graduation time and see them kids crossing the bridge up there. That was the most beautiful sight I ever seen, to me. They got a bridge up there. They've taken the bridge down now. And when you see those kids with all their blue gowns coming over that bridge, it was the most beautiful sight, and it always be the sun shining on them. It was just beautiful.
Yes. Do you think that the black neighborhoods developed during or after World War II? Do you think that World War II had something to do with the development of this and things being, you know, black and white?
Well, I'll tell you, this started about 20 years ago.
So down in there, the 60s?
Yeah, around in the 60s, they started moving in. Well, I'll tell you, out on State Street, something that, when they cleaned out Lexington Avenue, in the Hollow, as they called it, to put up green apartments down there, at the time, now down in State Street, there was all brown fronts, and they used to be all doctors. When I was a kid, that was all doctors' homes, and lawyers' homes, and whatnot. All middle-class white people lived all up and down State Street. Well, during World War II, the middle-class whites moved out of State Street. They started going out in the suburbs, like all down Myrtle Avenue. Why are they trying to fix up now? All down in there, it was all white, rich white people, rich. White people, middle class, white, all the DM Reeds, people own DM Reeds, people, and the Hollins people, all them. I seen the names in the paper just last week. Lived all in down in them side streets, had beautiful homes down there, all out Fairfield Avenue. When I was a kid, all out there was all rich people lived out there. I didn't live around no poor folks. I lived around all rich people, and there was But then, as I say in. And when they cleaned out Highland Avenue and Lexington Avenue and those streets around down there to put up green apartments, they put them people all up and down State Street and them old brownstones where the people moved out. I don't know, I guess some of them bought some of them and whatnot, but they got in there. Honey, I'm telling you, I used to take the bus. I used to go out to the United Congregational Church because I belonged to Church Women United.
When was this, the 1950s? 60s.
This was in the 60s, 70s. I used to go out to United Church, the Church Women United, and I'd come home on the bus sometime and I'd see them people out there. Out there, I used to be so ashamed, and I'd just feel so bad. The way they looked and the way they acted.
And the way the neighborhood had changed.
And then, when they decided to put the courthouse down there on State Street, when they decided to clean out State Street, put the courthouse down there, where do you think they started pushing them?
What was it?
Stratford Avenue. All in here. All in here. All in here was all. I met a woman in the Church Women, and she says, now she heard I lived in Davenport Street. She says, oh, she says, I live in Bunnell Street. She says, have you a daughter named Joan? And I suggested, well, she and my daughter went to school together, went to Harding. So every time somebody would come in, she'd tell them that she and I had something in common, that our daughters went to school together. She was proud to live over here. They started selling this, I don't know, you see, when real estate men get to selling to our people, they don't care what the neighborhood is, because this has always been a nice neighborhood, always a nice, respectable, a group, a kind of black people lived over in this neighborhood. But when they got to putting everything, and what the main, the thing of it is, they put them right out there on the main highway, because that was the only place to sell. And even some of those people that and on down there when they took the thruway, all them people down there, you should see Winter Street. Winter Street was the nicest little street, and all them people had their nice homes and had them all fixed nice, and some of them were just beginning to fix them up. They took every house on Winter Street, but one, the worst looking house was down there, right on the corner of Newfield Avenue and Stratford Avenue. Not Stratford, but Newfield and Winter, and left that house up there. And all them other houses they took for the thruway. And they took all down, the Elks place was down Orange Street, on that side of Orange Street. They cleaned Orange Street. Orange Street was had all down Orange Street. They just wrecked the neighborhood. This was a nice, decent neighborhood. Of course, they don't, when they're selling to, in a neighborhood where blacks already are, they don't ask anybody about anything about if they got the dollar, they give them the money. Of course, people got to live someplace too. But the thing of it to me is what ruins the thing is when people come in, if they go into a decent place, why don't they keep it decent? Why don't they? I heard a man on the radio the other morning say that how he sweeps out around his place and how his mother swept around this place. They lived over here in the east side somewhere. They were white. And he said how his mother used to do. I know what he's talking about because I used to do the same thing myself. I used to go out here when I was able and I'd sweep all around my house. And even now when I come in from church and somebody's been in and thrown bags down in front of my place, I pick up those things before I come in the house and bring them in here and put them in the trash can. Because I can't stand to see the street all messed up like that. And the lady across the street, but down here we try to keep the neighborhood decent.
It looks nice down here.
Lord, they'll come in and they'll come in and now that house is a house there just the other side of Newfield Avenue there. It was Mrs. Fitzgerald. And I know that woman has turned over in her grave a dozen times to see her house the way it is. I looked at Mary Wilson's house the day I came home. That was a beautiful house. And whoever's got that house is letting it go down. And those houses down there were owned by people that were conscious, property conscious, and kept, because Mary Wilson used to live here in Davenport Street. And she bought this big house, big, nice, big brown porch around it, down there in there's a third house down there on Stratford Avenue from Newfield. And that's running down. And they just get in the place, and then if you rent people the places, they won't take care of your rented property. And we lived in rented houses until we bought this place. And my husband was always painting. We were living there. That's where you live.
Yes.
And why can't you keep it clean around
take
where you live? And if you have people coming to see you, you want people to come into a decent place, and just because you rent it, you don't want to look like a
stack.
It's not the landlord's place to come in there and then you hear him tell people, I don't have a decent place to live. You can't have a decent place if you don't keep it decent. You got to keep it decent.
Yes.
And as we saying, I was talking to a friend of mine, you come up, you see them people sitting out there and the grass standing this high in the yards, and they're sitting there on the porch and they're eating this junk food and drinking out of these soda cans and things, throwing them on out there in the street. And I look today coming home from church and Stratford Avenue is a wreck. It's a wreck. And everything all boarded, honest to goodness, it's heart sickening.
Yes.
Because if I hadn't lived here and know what that street was, if I came into this town, I'd say, Lord, what would anybody want to live here for? But that's not the way that this town was. And there are some of the people in this neighborhood that have lived here for 40 and 50 years and more. And they're still in your heart sick. They're heart sick over what's happened to the neighborhood. And Wilmot Avenue down here was one of the most beautiful streets in the city. Beautiful houses. The beautiful houses down there now, but look at them. Bunnell Street, down there in Bunnell Street, behind the church there, they had some beautiful houses down in there. All these streets in here. But I don't know where these people came from. They sure weren't born in Bridgeport, and they didn't come from Bridgeport. But they have come off of the farm somewhere. I don't know where they came from. But they come in here and they just wrecked our city. Yeah, wrecked. That's all there is to it. And I don't know. It's just heart sickening. And I see the further out. And now what's happening to Stratford Avenue now? There's this man out here that's got this devilish garage, and he's just buying every corner here and got more. When we bought this house in here, you know they wouldn't allow you to have anything on this side of the street. This is a residential zone, a B residential zone. And you couldn't have any business on this side of Stratford Avenue, down in these side streets, because there was a man, a black man, he owned a lot down there in the Miles Street, and he wanted to put him up a garage down. He wanted to put up a car repair. They wouldn't let him have a car repair. He's dead, but I wish you could see this place now. And they wouldn't allow him to have a car repair. And look at this place now. Every corner, everything around here is nothing but old trucks and cars and I don't know. It's just sickening. It's just sickening.
Well, the cars and the businesses that are out there that are but look bad looking are not black owned, are they?
No, they're not black owned, no. They're not black owned. But that's what they do to you.
Yes.
You see? Mm-hmm. They get in the neighborhoods and they ruin them, and then these other people come in here and just mess them up for you. Mm-hmm. Like they had the motorcycle gang, and all of that gang came in here, and they drove them out, and they said they burned down the East End because the black folks made a complaint about them. They didn't want them in here. They had their motorcycles riding all up and down Stratford Avenue. You couldn't get through there. And they where they had the place is a church in there now, and they got in there. They was down here at the end of Wilmot Avenue and shooting through people's windows down there.
So you say that the neighborhood started to change, not right after World War II, but during the 60s.
Yeah, that's when the neighborhood started changing.
Do you think that the social upheaval that was going on during the 60s had something to do with the changes that were taking place, or do you think there was a connection between it?
I think this dope business coming in here is what started it.
Okay. But that this seemed to be more drugs after after the social upheaval started. Because the marches and sit-ins started like in 59, the late 50s.
Yeah. Well, okay. It was in the 60s when they started the schools, and the kids started rebelling in the schools and having all these I don't know what you call them.
So what I'm trying to say is I can remember that the marches and sit-ins started in the late 50s. Mm-hmm. Then the drugs came. Is this how things happened here in Bridgeport?
Mm-hmm.
And then the rebellion with the children and all of things started to change during that time. Were there marches and sit-ins and all of that going on in Bridgeport too during the 60s?
No, we didn't have not among our people, there was no marches.
Okay. Were the people in this area aware of the social changes that were taking place in other parts of the United States?
I was aware of it. I guess some of them were. Uh-huh. They
but there was just no participation particular.
There was they had different things started and whatnot, as things go. churches involved, and but I mean to take part in the in them. Why when the March on Washington, why people went from here, you know, Martin Luther King. I didn't go. My daughter went. Mm-hmm.